Thanks for listening to Exploring the Wine Glass podcast, the podcast for people who love wine. I'm Lori Budd, a UC Davis winemaking program and WSET Level 2 graduate. You can find Exploring the Wine Glass on all the socials as well as your favorite podcast catchers. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the perfect time. I promise I'll never tell you what to drink, but I'll always share what's in my glass. Egra Batuva is named after the region known for its production, Eger. Eger is a short 2-hour drive east from Budapest. It is located between Budapest and Tokaj and is the site of the 16th century battle between the Hungarians and the Ottomans. The vineyards in the region are close to the mountains, which provides for a cool climate. A region that had to survive socialism, where the quantity, not quality, was rewarded. Egri has only been working on its quality for about 20 years, but it has come a long way in that short time. So unscrew, uncork, or saber a bottle and join us today to learn more about this famous Hungarian blend. And please, take a brief moment of your time to rate and review Exploring the Wine Glass. And please, don't hesitate to send me an email about a topic you would like me to discuss on a future podcast. Sláinte! Hi, Deb.
So, welcome to Wine for Bet Street.
And thank you for joining us today. So, Debbie, do you want to introduce yourself first?
Sure. I'm Debbie Giaquindo. I'm known as the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess. I'm a wine blogger, wine writer. I am a restaurant owner of Kitchen 330 in Stone Harbor, and I am author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, Day Trips and Weekend Itineraries Visiting the Hudson Valley Wine Region. I think that's it, right?
Sure, I guess so. And I am Lori Budd, and I, along with my husband Michael, own Dracena Wines in Paso Robles, California. We specialize in Cabernet Franc. We are the founders of the internationally recognized Cab Franc Day, which is kind of is one of the reasons why we are talking about the wine we are today, and I'll explain that a little bit later. I also write an award-winning blog and produce the podcast Exploring the Wine Glass. And you can find me on all the social medias under both of those, Dracena Wines and Exploring the Wine Glass.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, and then the Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, A, Y, and Z. Now I know my ABC. Next time, won't you sing with me?
So today's letter of the day is E, and it is Egri Batuva. And I was a little surprised when I was doing the research, because I actually thought it was a grape, and I have had this before.
Uh-huh.
So it was very interesting, and it's one of the things I love about doing this series is that not only are we sending information out into the wine world that hopefully people are learning about, but I get to learn all new stuff too. So it was really, yeah, really kind of interesting.
Yeah, I kind of knew, but I've had years ago was participating in something and I had to get a bottle of it, but I really didn't know the whole background of it, which was really interesting.
Right. So now I did know the background of it. And as I mentioned earlier before our little song, one of the reasons why we chose Egri Batuva is because while Michael and I were in Hungary as a guest of Villeneuve wine region to discuss Cab Franc Day and Cabernet Franc's presence in California, we were in Budapest, and every night we went out and we picked a bottle of local wine to give a try, and that's how we ended our evening. And we picked a bottle of Bull's Blood, and I researched while we were drinking the bottle. I was on my phone Googling why it's called bull's blood. So I was familiar with the history, but even then I thought that it was a grape. So I love learning new stuff about wine.
Yeah.
So
and we were thinking about doing that grape too for Kay.
Yes. Yes.
So that's to be determined.
Yes, to be determined. And we're going to talk, I'll talk more about that off camera or whatever.
Yeah.
We might have a connection for that.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, so we are in season 2, letter E, and for the first time ever,
we have
the same wine. Same
and we
vintage.
Didn't find that out until
Debbie posted on Instagram.
So yours was 50 cents cheaper than mine.
Yes, I'm quite the bargain shopper. I am quite the bargain shopper. So are we ready to give this a taste?
Sure.
So here comes our lovely sound that we love so much.
All right.
So, Slancha.
Cheers.
Okay, here we go. Mine actually might still be a little too cold. I put it in at 6:30 and pulled it out at 7, but it seems a little cold.
Oh, I opened mine at 7:30. The nose, it smells nice.
You know, it's not shabby.
It's okay. It's not, it's not heavy. It's light.
No, it's very light. And you can tell, I mean, it's always tough in the videos to see it, but it's a very light color. It's transparent.
Yeah.
It is definitely ruby. It's got a little.
Sour cherry.
Yeah. Yes. A little.
Oh, my God. This finish is sour cherry.
Transparency on the edges.
But it's not bad. I would say this could be a porch pounder.
Yeah, absolutely. And at 9:29. I don't know. This might be a go-to for when people come over to the house.
I mean, that's not bad at all. And, you know, I have to say, when I can remember years ago when I had to go find a bottle of this, and I went into Arlington Liquor, and they were like, bull's blood, you know?
Right.
And they gave it to me. You know, there was like one, I don't even know what brand. I'd have to go back and search through pictures. And it wasn't as good as this.
Yeah. This is
this
is a nice pleasant surprise.
I'm very surprised. I'm very surprised. Not really, there's really no faults in it. It's smooth, it's easy drinking.
And it's definitely sour cherry. It's sour cherry. There's a little hint to me of maybe rosemary. Little rosemary on the nose. There's a little dust, a little earth type thing. But definitely red fruit, maybe even a little plum on the nose. But
maybe there's like a hint of a. Maybe it's the rosemary.
But on the palate, it's actually. It's fuller. It's a fuller body than I actually would have thought by looking at it. It's not full bodied. It's a medium body, but by the look of it, I would have said
probably more light bodied.
Yeah, but I was expecting it to be like super light. And there's, you know, there's that 2% milk, I think. You know.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
It's the palate. The finish is actually really quite long.
I
think it's a winner in my book.
I'm impressed.
You know, and you buy a case of it, you're getting 15% off. This is a steal, yeah. I think, you know, something, and I think it's very easy going. So like I was saying, if you have people over who really aren't so much into wine, but want a bottle of wine, you're looking at $9 a bottle, less than $9 a bottle with a discount. I think it's a solid win for a party.
Yeah, and it's nice flavors.
Mm-hmm. And at the very least, if they look at the label and ask what the heck, it's a party conversation starter.
Absolutely. So we go into, you know, because we're going to sit here because we're impressed with this.
Yes.
And talk about it, but we got to.
Yes. So you are actually up first with the history.
Egri Bilvakar. You pronounce it much better than I do. I have issues pronouncing a lot of things. It was also known as Bull's Blood of Egger. Baika meaning bull and Ver meaning blood. Made both in Sisgard in the south of Hungary and in Egger in the northeast. So we're going to start out with legend versus reality. So legend has it that Egri Bulvakar, bull's blood, dates back to the Turkish occupation and the siege of Agar in 1552. The captain of the castle, Esteban Dobo, brought red wine to the soldiers that were fighting on the walls. And the red wines would stain their beards and everything. So the Turks thought that the soldiers in Agar drank blood, mainly that blood of the bull. So the Turks didn't dare fight their defenders, having gained the power of the strength from the bull's blood. So they were afraid. They were afraid of them. They thought, oh my God, they drinking this bull's blood and they're gaining the strength of a bull. We've got, you know, no way are we going to win this war. So they, rescinded. So let's see here. So the siege of 1552, Ahmed Pasha was the leader of the Turkish armies, and he liked one of the maids that was serving at the local inn. And the innkeeper and the staff didn't have enough time to flee before the attack, so they stayed. And they figured that, they'll put their fate in the Turkish, and they didn't get killed. And the Pasha employed the innkeeper's wife as a cook. And he really liked the beautiful maid and wanted to make her one of his mistresses.
One of his mistresses?
What?
One of his mistresses.
And the girl was scared and asked the innkeeper's wife to save her. So she promised to save her. And that night before the siege, the innkeeper's wife made a special sauce to accompany heavy meat of the dish. And the Pasha loved it, and he couldn't stop eating the red sauce. And he loved it so much, he began drinking the red sauce from the cup. Well, it was the bull's blood, and it was the wine. And the alcohol made him so disoriented that he went to bed. and the maid escaped from the tent and was nowhere to be seen. She just, like, ran like no one would, you know, like you or I would run. And he was so in the... And the Pasha was so angry and accused the cook of adding some secret substance to the sauce to make him pass out. And the cook defended herself by saying that the only extra ingredients that she added to the food was bull's blood, which was commonly consumed in Hungary. So that's how famous red wine of Agar became Baikvar, which was bull's blood. So there weren't many pictures and stuff. I didn't have a lot of stuff to choose from.
Yeah.
For this. So the bull's blood was first designated by Janos Garre in his poem called Drinking Song from Zygarde. Is that how you pronounce that?
I believe so.
Okay, in 1846. And it was called Pour it in your glass and you'll see a miracle. Its color is like bull's blood, yet the pearl that it shines from it is like snow white. And the vine which produced it is like green a meadow. Where else can you find a nicer tricolor of our nice homeland? So reality is, the grapes were grown in Hungary until the Turkish occupation, and the craft of making red wine was brought to the country by the Serbians fleeing from the conquest from the Ottoman Empire. It is not known truly when the Egri Bulvakar emerged, but it has been recorded as early as the beginning of the 19th century. Bulvakar, a full-bodied red wine produced in Agar and Sisgard. Suskir Ivestan in 1981 wrote, "I have searched different sources for the composition of the grape types constituting bull's blood. The earliest record dates back to 1912 when, in addition to Cactacar, I have found Blue Frank, Cabernet, and Merlot." So over the past two decades, winemakers have been working really hard in refining the conditions of production, name, classification, and control for the wine. In 1997, Igrai Bifikar became the first wine of protected denomination origin in Hungary, in modern Hungary wine history, under the Igrai Bifikar regulation of 1997. This domesticated the red wine, and it's the true essence of the red wine of Eger, a terroir wine which carries the flavor of the soils of local production sites and the different microclimates of the region. It is a blend of at least three grapes for the classic Bikavir and at least five varieties for the Superior Bikavir and the Grand Superior. So the main grape in bull's blood in Igrai Bifikar is Kekfrankos, which we all know as Blackenfrosch or Lemberger. And the wine must be at least 50% of this grape. And the other varieties that are blended in are Kedarka, Syrah, Merlot, Portugieser, Minar, Blauberger, Pinot Noir, and Zweigelt, and also Turan. And there can be a maximum of 30% Cabernet Sauvignon, Cab Franc on their own or combined. And in the Superior and Grand Superior, you can have 5% of Turan. The wine is produced in a three-tier system of quality. The Classic is aged in oak for a minimum of 6 months, the Superior for 12 months, and the Grand Superior for 16 months. And that's what I got on history.
All right. I'm just pouring myself another glass because...
I didn't find that much. It was very difficult. Did you find
I actually, quite a bit. Oops, I just almost lost it, which would have stuck because I wouldn't have been able to pick it up.
I should have, like, called in a relative. Seriously, I should have. I thought about doing that, but I'm like, wait, I can do this.
I know. You have a connection.
Yeah, I've got some family still over there that own wineries.
Yeah.
So. But it's not the same region.
I found some things. Some of it is a little bit similar to what you talked about. I found a little bit. It definitely is not one of the most easily to find. Let's just put it that way. So I have the general characteristics. Before I actually get into the general characteristics of Igrai Bifikar, I need to do a little shameless self-promotion. So as I said, two Thanksgivings ago, Mike and I were the guests of the Villeneuve wine community in Hungary, and we were brought there to talk about Cabernet Franc. And while we were there, we spent 3 days in Budapest. And so we were there for 7 total days. And while we were there, that's how we first came upon this bull's blood. So upon returning back to the States, I wrote a series of blog posts because there was just way too much information to do in a single post. So I did 3 of them, and I thought I was really clever with my titles. So, Are You Hungry for Wine? So part 1 is about history. Part 2 is about Villeneuve itself. And then part 3 was actually about the Tokaj wines. And that was where we got the samples of the Tokaj that we did at the wine dinner.
Okay.
So nice and simple, Hungary P1, P2, and P3. Okay. So Igrai Bifikar is named after the region known for its production, Eger. Igrai is a short 2-hour drive east from Budapest, and it is located between Budapest and Tokaj. And it is the site of the 16th century battle between the Hungarians and the Ottomans. The vineyards themselves are in the region are close to the mountains, so it provides a very cool climate. And the region that has survived socialism, where quantity, not quality, was rewarded, Egri has only been working on its quality for about 20 years. So that was a big problem with a lot of the Hungarian wines, including Cab Franc, but especially this Bull's Blood, is that because under socialism control, they just wanted the producers to pump out more and more and more wine, and they didn't really care about the quality. But in the last 20 years, that kind of has taken the back end, and now wineries, the winemakers, are really focusing in on producing high-quality wines, and it has changed significantly. So Egri Bakıva is, as you said, a red blend in Eger, and that is actually the second largest city in Hungary, and then it is also produced in Szeszgard. The first known reference to Egri Bakıva was in 1553 at the fortress of Eger, and I did not have the luxury of seeing this fortress, but it is magnificent. The castle is known for repelling the Turkish attack in 1552 during the siege of Eger. It is here that İstan Dobo and his troops repelled the attack of the 30 times bigger Sultan's army, which was led by Ahmed Pasha, who was the chief commander. And that's where this Bull's Blood legend comes into play. Now, I heard a little bit different story when we were there, was that he actually told his men, because they all thought that they were going to die because there were 30 times as many people that they were going to fight the next morning. The legend that I heard was that he told his men that he was feeding them bull's blood, so that when they went to sleep, they would wake up with the strength of the bulls, and that would allow them to conquer the 30 times people.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, right. So I thought that was pretty cool, but that it's a different. It told you know, yeah, it's like the telephone game.
Legend versus reality. There's more than one legend.
Right. So they drank the wine, which they felt that they thought was bull's blood. And they woke up with this amazing, you know, like, oh, my God, we can kick some ass. Yeah. You know, and they went out and they did so. So the Turks attacked the border castle and the battle continued for an entire month. On September 28th, the Turks managed to expunge one of the bastions. But thanks to the resourcefulness of the Captain Dobo, where they were able to push off the army. And this is basically the brand logo for Bull's Blood. So rumor has it that the Hungarians drank the blood of the bull during the siege, which provided them with their superhuman power. And that is where the name comes from. Egri Bakıva is all about the blends. 20 years ago, the wines were more like a Bordeaux blend with only a small percentage of the indigenous grapes. But most recently, this has changed, and more regulations have come into play that state that the wine must be produced in Egri district of the wine region. In recent years, there has been a steady increase in the amount of Cab Francs in the blend. There are similarities and differences between Bakıva, which is produced in those two regions. So the similarities between Egri and Szeszgard Bakıva. Both are required a minimum of the four grape varietals that must be included. Cab Franc, as you mentioned, must be a dominant grape. And other grape varieties are usually the Bordeaux varietals, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot. And as you mentioned, also the Zweigelt, Turan, and Kadarka. There's a minimum oak aging requirement, but the oak flavor, it is written that the oak flavor cannot be a dominant profile in the wine.
So do you think that they use neutral oak?
No, I think they can use new oak, but the size, I think they're going with the sizes of the Basques so that the surface area is different.
Sure.
And I couldn't find, but I would bet that there is the same as with the tiers of Cap Franc and Villenay, there is a jurisdictional panel that they must submit to if they want to be classified, and those people have to
Okay.
taste it annually. I'm guessing that's going to be the same for this, where they have to submit their wine, and whosever palate it is
Right.
going to determine that it is not oak influenced, or it can be oak influenced. It can't be overly oaked. It can't be, sorry, it can't be a California Chardonnay, it can't be the Butterbomb type thing, right? So it can't have an overly that dominant oakness. And then the differences are that Aigri has three categories, as you mentioned, the classic, the superior, and the grand superior. Sesgard only has two categories, and they're titled regular and premium. Oak aging requirements for the basic Bacuva vary. So the 6 months in Eger, where it's 12 months in Sesgard. The higher categories of both regions, though, do require 12 months. Permitted grape varieties vary. So in Aigri, it allows 13 varieties for the classic and 12 for the superior and grand, where the Sesgard allows 18 for the regular, but only 10 for the premium. So including Kadarka is a requirement in Sesgard, but not in Aigri, which I thought was interesting. Also, the minimum alcohol levels vary. For Aigri, it requires an 11.5% minimum for the Classicus and 12% for the superior and grand superior, where in Sesgard, both styles require 12%.
Mine's, well, yours is too, 12%.
Right. So this chart is actually a fantastic chart
That
that
is
shows the similarities and the differences, and it is exactly what I just went over. And the reason why I stated it is because I don't know how big this actually looks when somebody is looking at it. But it was a beautiful chart that had the
It
similarities and differences. So if anybody was interested, they can see that. And
I wonder why they limit the amount of Toran. Have you ever had that grape?
no.
I wonder what that is.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
Maybe
never have either.
we can, I don't know. I've never seen it, but we can start looking.
Yeah.
We can start looking. Okay, so Aigri Bacuva color ranges from garnet red to deep ruby. And I couldn't find any actual documented tasting notes, so this is what I got before, because we didn't taste it yet. This is what I got from Vivino's community to determine it. Basically, you can expect black fruit, including plum, which I did mention at the beginning that I
Yes.
did think there was some plum in there.
Oh, I got some. This is so good.
Blueberry, black cherry, cassis, black currant, and blackberry.
I got blackberry now.
As it warms up a little bit for me, as
And
it.
that sour cherry that I had on the finish is not as dominant anymore.
Oh, okay. So again, shows you how the temperature affects it. Earthiness includes stone, minerals, mushroom, leather, bacon, fat, and roasted meat. And then this is what I was getting at the beginning, was more of the red fruits, including the cherry, raspberry, cranberry, strawberry, and red currant. And then because it is oak aged, you are going to get some influence on it. So you can include some chocolate, coffee, cedar, tobacco, and spices, which include pepper, fennel, bay, licorice, dried herbs, cinnamon, mint, hazelnut, molasses, and toast. Now I did get some of the herbs. I
Yeah.
did not get coffee.
I actually got chocolate.
On the palate, I see. Now I'm getting like a I'm getting the hazelnut now.
I got a little bit on the palate.
Right. Yeah.
I had written it down.
Mine is still a little bit chilly, so mine might get more.
Sour cherry is still there.
Yes, definitely.
It's still.
Definitely.
It's a huge on the finish. Right. It's not as. It didn't pucker. I don't pucker as much as I did at the
correct.
Beginning.
Correct. Me too. There's still sour cherry, but it doesn't have that.
Yeah.
When I first tasted it, it really reminded me of when I was a kid. I used to love to eat those sour cherry balls, the candies, and it really reminded me of that. Which I kept going back to when we were doing the Barolo, I kept getting that sour cherry also, but it's not as dominant now. And then last thing I have is due to the riper, more concentrated grape produce, as well as the extended aging in barrels and bottles, the Superior and Grand Superior wines have marked aromas of mellowing and lasting flavors, full body, and a long shelf life of minerality, and it's very harmonious. The difference between them is usually manifested in the fullness and duration of the aroma. Now, this must just be a classic because it's not rated. It doesn't have Superior or Grand Superior. So this must just be a classic. So I'm very, very intrigued now to try to find an upper tier one.
The liquor store, this was the only choice for me.
Yeah. I think I had two to choose from. I'm pretty sure I had two to choose from.
That was my only choice.
So, I'm impressed with it. It's not something that I would say, you know, oh my God, this is, you know, end all be all of red wine. But when you consider that $9 price, it's amazing.
I think if you want to open a bottle of wine and you don't want to open a really good bottle of wine, you just want to, you know, you've had a whatever.
Right.
Day and you just want to sit down and open a bottle of wine and not think about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the bottle that you want to open.
Yeah, I agree. Now,
you know,
I bought mine. I actually did buy it at Total Wine. And I was a bit confused because on the Total Wine website, it is listed as having Grenache in it. And
really?
I think it's a website error because in no research was Grenache
ever mentioned
as being allowed. And that's exactly, I'm not even aware Grenache is there. So I think it's a Total Wine faux pas. That is,
I got mine at Viscount in Fishkill.
Okay. So I think Total Wine has the Egri Bakiva in the wrong section.
It happens.
Yeah. And so that was my, I was like, that's not one of the 13 that are allowed. So I think it's whoever did the the typing in there.
Right.
And what did, it's 12% alcohol, it's 12%. As you mentioned. And I was able to find it. I'm not sure if you were. This has what I found was the Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Zweigelt is in there.
Yeah, I got the same. The legendary red wine of the region. The spicy ruby spicy red noble grape is a blend of Cifrancos, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Zweigelt.
Oh, okay, good. So
yeah,
we got that the same.
Best with Hungarian dishes and spicy games.
Yes.
I think that this is a cooperative produces it. I couldn't find much on it.
Well, I actually went to Snooth. And Snooth had a decent, for what I would consider what the wine is. I thought they had quite a bit about it. According to Snooth, it is, this part was not Snooth. Produced in accordance with centuries-old tradition, Egri Bakiva is still a blend of noble and indigenous varieties. This was aged up to 2 years in oak and it's in volcanic stone cellars. And then according to Snooth, I could find information about the vineyard.
So if I went to EBBVIN,
yep,
it seemed that it was somebody, almost like a consortium of wines, mm-hmm. to me, with many different...
Yeah, it seems like it's a super brand.
Yeah, that's a good way. Many, you know, one owner, but many brands.
Right.
Because it went to about Us, and it said, is the trader of self-bottled and developed unique wines. We're building and improving our own distinct wine brands, developed over decades with continuously improving image. Our wines reflect the characteristics, flavor, and specific wine regions, as well as the realization of our commercial and strategic objectives. Years of experience. They don't say who they are,
right,
or what they are, or where they are.
Right. Let me read what I read, what I found on Snooth. Egervin Vineyard Company takes enormous pride in a tradition of winemaking that spans several decades. It was founded in 1949. The company has been reorganized and improved over the years. It has now been operating since June of 1993 under a new and revitalized leadership as a private firm with 100% Hungarian ownership. During this period, the company has achieved a leading position in the developing Hungarian wine industry, and as an exporter has become one of the most significant players in Hungarian wine making. So that was directly off of Snooth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so easy to find information about the winery, or like I thought the producer was Egervin, but
I thought so too.
I think that's the vineyard. So I think we're looking at a conglomerate that just is kind of mass producing.
I think they have a little bit of everything.
Right.
But they're not telling you what their background is. There's probably multi-investors.
Right, right.
And there's probably a lot of different arms.
Yeah. I did find that they make 3 million bottles a year.
Okay.
So divide that by 12.
Of bull's blood?
What of that, yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of bull's blood.
That's a lot of bull's blood. Yes, yes, yes. And now a word from our sponsor. Exploring the Wine Glass is brought to you by Dracena Wines. Dracena Wines is an artisan winery located in Paso Robles, California. They have been producing wine since 2013. Their first vintage began with one wine, their classic Cabernet Franc, which received a 91 in Wine Enthusiast. Since then, they have increased production, received several accolades, including double gold medals in the San Francisco Chronicle Wine Competition, and consistent 90-plus ratings. In addition to their classic Cabernet Franc, they now produce a single vineyard, single clone reserve Cabernet Franc and a rosé of Syrah. Although they've increased production every year, they continue to sell out each vintage. Find out more about Dracena Wines and their award-winning wines at dracenawines.com and let them help turn your moments into great memories. We're going to move on to food pairings.
Okay.
Now, I would say that, you know, I had anesthesia in me from the surgery, so I did the wrong thing and I did food pairings instead of fast facts. But unfortunately, I hadn't had the surgery yet, and I was in full state of mind when I did the food pairings. And Debbie sent me a very nice text going,
I was like, all right, don't I have food pairings? I'm like halfway through my food pairings, and I was like going through my family like cookbooks and stuff, and
so. I
did upload both of our slides.
You did. So we have a double dose of food pairings for you tonight. So an overload of potential recipes for you to pair with Egri Bakiva. So Debbie, since it's really supposed to be yours, do you want to go first or should I go first? Okay. So you can go first.
So pretty much with this, it's a nice, it's a red wine. You probably want to go something with rich, and it's got a little bit of acid, I think, also in yes. wine. So, you know, it'll break down that fat of a steak. They say, you know, you might want to prepare a dish with some spice to it. But I wouldn't overdo. When I say spice, I'm talking flavorful spice, not heat spice.
Correct. I agree with that.
The roast steaks, things like that. So I went to my cookbooks, and those are my two Hungarian cookbooks beside my family handwritten recipes. So I went through those to try and find some kind of like authentic type of recipes. And then I went to try and find pictures of them online. So we'll see how good I came out. So, well, one was roasted duck, which is called Kashan Pecheni. And this is actually a roasted duck dish we do at Kitchen 330. So just so happens to be. And next is Hungarian goulash. So this was a staple in my house. And in fact, my parents every New Year's Eve, it was paprikash that they ate every New Year's Eve, but Hungarian goulash. And this is gulyás. Now, I have a funny story about this. So my grandfather, God bless him, he was 93, I think, when he passed away. He would make this dish actually in his microwave. And it tastes really good, and I tried to duplicate it, and it did not taste like my grandfather. So it's a Hungarian beef soup, paprika beef soup. And I have no idea, like, if he browned he did brown the meat before and then just heated it up. But I remember stopping at his house, and he made it, and I'm like, this is great. He gave me the recipe. I could not duplicate it for the life of me. So that went down under with him. foie gras is also something that would pair nicely with it. I know you don't like foie gras, but that is actually something that would pair nice with it. This is paprikash. This is what my parents ate every New Year's Eve. They made it with veal, dumplings, and I've made it. It doesn't taste as good as my mothers or my grandmothers. Hunter style pot roast, which is nice. And Hungarians are big on stuffed peppers. Now this is and actually I plant these in my garden every year, these Hungarian peppers, just because it just keeps me in touch with my roots. And they're actually sweet peppers.
So that's not a roll. That's like a pepper that's stuffed.
It's a long yellow pepper.
Oh, okay.
And when I first planted it, my husband's like, it's going to be hot. I'm like, no, it's sweet. It is a sweet pepper. They do make Hungarian hots, but you can do it, Hungarian sweet peppers. And it's usually made with pork, but you can also make it with beef. And there's other dishes that pair well. Venison will probably go well with this. Stews, if you have any, you know, stews, pheasant. Partridge
in the pear tree.
There was partridge and stuff in the cookbooks, and I just couldn't find anything like, you know, that, and that's just not in my realm of diet either, so I didn't spend too much time searching. But they had some interesting recipes in there, and you know, some I've actually tried. And there's a lot of cabbage, like stuffed cabbage. They're big on stuffed cabbage. And I actually should have posted my stuffed cabbage, because I've made a Hungarian stuffed cabbage before.
That was our biggest problem, which is the biggest problem whenever we travel, is what am I eating?
Yes.
But we found Italian restaurants in Hungary. It was really good. The food was really, really good. But Mike and I will, that usually when we're on vacation, You know, everything's all good because, you know, you're on vacation, you're relaxed, you're all happy. Then whenever it comes to dinner time, there's usually an argument because we'll walk to go find a restaurant and we'll look at a menu and I'm like, there's nothing for me to eat. And we'll go to the next restaurant. There's nothing for me to eat. And then after about the fifth time, I'm like, as long as they have lettuce, I'm good. Just let me have lettuce. Just let me have lettuce. And he's like, no, we'll keep going. So, yeah, but we found a really, really good Italian restaurant. I loved that. Yeah, I think we had pizza the second night too. I mean,
Did you? I
yeah.
would have been eating stuffed cabbage. I would have been
Yeah, but
eating
what is it always
Hungarian
stuffed with?
paprikash. I love
It's all.
in my house. My mother called it Hungarian no name because my grandmother gave her the recipe and it didn't have a name, so she called
Oh.
it Hungarian no name, and it was veal paprikash. So,
Yeah, see, all
and
the
it's
stuff
actually
stuffed.
pretty easy to make, and she would make it with veal. My mother would make it with veal,
If
but
I
it
could
can be
just have
made
the
with chicken.
cabbage, if I could just have the cabbage, I'd be happy. I just don't want the stuffing.
Oh. And the dumplings, I loved it with the dumplings.
Which has what in it?
It's just flour and water dumplings.
Oh, okay.
The paprikash, you would have the veal paprikash, but you would have the dumplings and I'd have the veal.
Okay. All right. So we found something.
Yeah.
All right. So my food pairings. Egri bakliava requires 2 or 3 years of oak aging. So it is best with game, lamb, pork, beef, or other spiced foods. And it is best with mature hard cheese or blue cheese. And it is recommended to be served at 15 to 17 degrees Celsius.
I kind of think blue cheese would overpower this.
I don't eat blue cheese, so I can't tell you, but
Oh, I will.
the
It,
funk
I think it would
is
overpower it.
pretty funky, so I can see it overpowering it. I can see it. But personally, I don't know. Okay. So this is venison with caramelized onions and mushrooms.
We can see that.
Okay. So,
That tastes well.
yeah, I
There's
think
this
the
earthiness in the wine.
exactly. And the
And the venison,
gaminess.
it's red meat. That would taste really nice.
Yeah, I again, I don't eat either of the, I don't eat, well, I'd eat the onions, but
I really don't eat venison like that until the executive sous chef for the Boston Bruins gave me a sample.
okay.
And it was
All right, well, I guess if he's going to give you a sample, I
at the
still wouldn't
Hudson
eat it.
Valley Wine Fest when he was demoing, and
No, I
yeah,
still
and
wouldn't
I'm
eat it.
like, I was like, oh well, like a smaller piece because I wasn't sure. It was very good.
Did I ever share with you the one time we, this is why we don't go to wine dinners anymore. We were invited to a wine dinner here in New Jersey at a very classy restaurant. And it was like $250 a head, but we were a guest of somebody. You
Wow.
know, and we walked into the restaurant in Englewood Cliffs, and I looked at the menu, and I almost keeled over from just looking at the menu. And the first course comes out, and it was mushroom, blah blah blah blah, right? So of course I don't eat it, but I drank the wine. And then it was like pigeon was on the core, you know, like it was just all of this stuff that was. By the third course, Mike is like kicking me under the table. Just cut it up and move it around the plate because they would seriously come and put the plate down in front of me and I'd be like, "Oh my God," and I would just drink the wine, right? So by the third course, and then they would come and take it away and give me the next course. By the third course, Mike is like, "Cut it up, move it around the plate and make it look like you ate it." All right? Just make it look like you ate it. So that's what I do. I'd cut it up and I'd like move it around the plate so that it looked like somebody ate something and they'd remove it. And then at the end of the dinner, we leave and I'm like, can we go to the diner and I get a salad, please? So that's what we do. We left a $250 a head dinner and
Oh,
we
Lori.
went to the local diner and got me a Greek
Oh,
salad.
Lori.
So, lamb borek. I really don't remember what this is. But I thought it looked pretty cool. I mean, it
Interesting.
looks like a pretzel, a rolled pretzel with lamb.
It does, or maybe it's a sausage.
No, I think that's, I think it is bread. I think that is okay. Bread. It's like a pastry type thing.
Okay.
Baked pork tenderloin.
Okay.
Beef Wellington.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, okay.
I would want a heavier wine with the beef Wellington, though.
I have no idea what that tastes like, but what about
a heavier wine?
Why heavier? What about a beef Wellington?
Because it's like the tail end of the filet mignon. It's a Chateaubriand. It's
a big meat.
I just think it would be a heavier. I think this will be okay, but I would enjoy it better with a cab.
So in the picture, you see that it's got the like dough around it, right?
Yeah, the pastry. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then there's the meat. Is that like flavor? Like, do you put seasoning?
They kind of like sear the meat first.
Oh, okay.
And then you wrap it, I believe, in the pastry, and then you bake it.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so I'm guessing you have to cook the meat first, because the meat would never cook if the pastry would cook first. Okay. Firecracker chicken. So this one I thought, okay, but it would really depend on how hot it was, because as you were saying, I think a true spicy dish would overpower this. But at only 12% alcohol.
But if it's flavorful, I think we'll be fine.
Right. But it is with the white rice. Excuse me. It is with the white rice. So I think that the combination of the chicken, the spice in the chicken, and the...
I think it'll be fine.
The blandness of the white rice, I think, would go well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the aged hard cheeses and blue cheese. So that was my food.
I'm really liking this.
Yes, so do I.
I might be drinking the whole bottle by the end of the
day. So do I. I like it. I like it. All right. So I'm going to go again now that I'm doing what I was supposed to do.
Now that everybody's hungry.
Yes. Now that everybody's hungry. And I learned how to cook some meat that I'll never eat. We're going to do some fast facts. So if you're going to leave this presentation, leave this podcast with, only X amount of things to remember. These are those that we hope you remember. So fact number one, Egri Bakiva, or Bull's Blood of Igar, is a red blend produced in Igar and also in Schweizgard. Fact number two, Egri Bakiva is produced in accordance with a regulation designating three tiers of quality: Classicus, Superior, and Grand Superior. The product description contains the rules of yield restriction, fermentation, aging in barrels and in bottles, as well as how they are allowed to market it and trade it for the different tiers. And that I thought was interesting, and I did actually try to go down the rabbit hole of that, because I was really interested of how they regulate the marketing and actual selling of the wine. The other AOCs or things like that, they can regulate how you make the wine, but I am unaware of any regulation of how they can market it. But apparently this is also regulated as how they can market it. But I couldn't find anything that stipulated what those regulations were. Fact number three, Egri Bakiva requires 2 or 3 years of oak aging and is best with game, lamb, pork, beef, or other spicy food. It is best with mature hard cheese and blue cheese, and Egri Bakiva should be served between 15 and 17 degrees Celsius. Number four, the first known reference to Egri Bakiva was in 1552 at the fortress of Igar. The castle is known for repelling the Turkish attack in 1552 during the siege of Igar. And fact number five is that Egri Baklava is actually all about the blends. It is not a grape itself. Cape Francos must be the dominant grape, and other grape varieties are usually the Bordeaux varietals, such as Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot, and regional local ones, such as Zweigelt, Turan, and Cardaca. So,
I'm enjoying this.
I really am, too. And it's nice to know that you can have a wine that's $9 or under $10, really, that is an enjoyable wine. It goes to show that, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money to...
And I'm surprised.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I didn't have any expectations coming into this. And it was so long ago when I tasted this. For something else, I mean, this is a long time ago, but I'm just like
digging it,
really enjoying it.
Yeah.
It does have, you know, I think a little high acid. It'll go well with food.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something, you know, this is a nice red wine in the summertime because it's not heavy.
Right.
You know, I have problems. I can't drink cabs in the summer because it's like it's hot and I'm drinking this heavy, you know, it's like I'm going to pass out.
Right.
But this is a nice, you know, summer red.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It can be a very nice summer red, but it has enough body to it that it can be a winter red too.
I mean, it goes well with steaks, stews. Yeah. Winter to me is stew time. You know,
right.
Stew
and
food. This will go very well with it.
Right. Yeah. I like it. I wish that I could. I'm going to have to go back through my photos because I'm sure at some point when we were in Hungary that I took a picture of the bottle. Because I'll be curious and like shocked if this is actually the bottle that we purchased while we were in Hungary.
I think this bottle that we both got is so widely distributed. I think it's probably the number one bull's blood that's distributed in the States.
Right.
That's so, just from what when I typed in under images, this
that's
is
what
all
popped
I
up.
Got.
Right. So
of the wine.
I am. I'm going to have to go back and look at my pictures of Hungary and see what bull's blood, because we purchased two.
Yeah.
So I know one of them definitely is not this, but I'm curious if the other one was. Because, you know, we just went to like the local supermarket, shop to purchase. But anyways, well, I am all for drinking more bull's blood.
I am too.
So cheers to that, Slancha.
I hope you guys go get a bottle of bull's blood and enjoy it like we are and let us know what you're thinking.
Absolutely. And Debbie, what are we doing next month?
Oh, next month we're doing Fumé Blanc. Fumé Blanc is March 16th.
March 16th. Sounds good.
So you free March 16th? Do we have a date?
We have a date. I don't know. I will be in California, hopefully off of crutches, okay. But probably not.
I gotta go find a bottle.
I think that will be an easy one to find.
Yeah, it's in Oak Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes.
So.
That's gonna be some interesting history because I love the history behind Fumé Blanc.
Yeah.
That is a pure marketing genius right there.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yes.
So March 16th, it is. Fumé Blanc will be in our glass. I will be in California, so it will be warmer. So we'll be drinking.
I will be here on the East Coast. So,
yes.
We will see you all then.
Yes. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. And Elmo says thank you. And we will see you for the letter F in 1 month.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Slancha.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This has been another episode of Exploring the Wine Glass. Thanks for listening. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like me to discuss, please reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Exploring the Wine Glass. I'm also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Of course, you can always email me at exploringthewineglass@gmail.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find me more easily. Until next week, Slancha!